even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I love the sensation of colour. And I remember Shu Imra in Harvey Nichols. It was just like a playground.
Yeah.
And the fact that everything had such high pigment that looked good on my skin, it was literally, it literally makes me feel very happy. Anytime I'm depressed or sad, I will go to a makeup counter and look at colours.
Hello and welcome back. This week's guest is the brilliant, multi-award winning beauty journalist, blogger, director and producer Atte Jewell, who has worked in the industry for over 17 years for amazing titles like Vogue and Tatler and Sunday Times Style and The Telegraph and The Guardian Weekend magazine and Red and Get the Gloss. And I could go on and on. Atte's written for loads of different publications and she's a very, very gifted journalist. But as well as being very gifted, she is also really kind and compassionate and warm, as you'll no doubt come to find yourself as you listen to this episode. So we talk about how beauty has come to mean an awful lot to Atte. It's comfort. She talks about the joy she finds in it and enjoying the colours and the scents and all the sensorial elements. She also talks about some products that are just so niche and I think really speak of her love of beauty. Like, she references a lip gloss that came out in 1994. So for Atte, beauty is not a career, it's a way of life. It's something that has genuinely been part of the fabric of her existence from a very young age. So without any further ado, here's Atte Jewell on her beautiful life.
You've said that you were captivated by 1950s studio, you know, that MGM film.
Multicoloured, like, music. I mean, growing up, I just loved the colour, the glamour, like Seven Brides for Seven Sisters and...
Seven brides for people who could marry them legally.
Seven brides for seven sisters.
Okay.
Anyway, I loved MGM video. I loved Freddie Stare. I loved all the colour, all the glamour. It was, you know, I remember trying to bunk off school and saying I was sick so I could watch The Sound of Music.
Really?
Yeah, it was just pure escapism, pure joy. And I always felt that movies and film were my teachers. It was a safe place. I mean, I had quite an uprooted, traumatic childhood.
But in what sense?
Well, my parents got divorced at 8. We moved country. It was a very acrimonious, crazy divorce. My dad was like a secret polygamist and had other families, and it all came out. It was just, it was like, you know, Dallas on crack. And it was just, and you know, I moved countries, you know, we moved back to America, then we moved back to London, then we moved back to America. So there was a
lot. Did you start in America?
I went to school at 8 in a Baptist school, and it was very, you know, I went to a very posh little school in Connaught Square, and then suddenly I was in LA asking if Jesus loved me, and I was like, what the hell is going on?
Were your parents religious?
No, but I think my mum thought it was the safest place.
Oh, a bit like a Catholic school.
Exactly. She's like, you know, she won't get shot in a Baptist school.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was very weird, but, you know, so for me, a safe place was always film and glamour and colour.
Really the cradle of your love of beauty.
Yeah, I think the colour, the glamour, also the transformation. The fact you can take yourself somewhere, transcendent. I think everything I love is about comfort and transforming and taking yourself, transcending into another plane.
Did you also like the transformation that happens in films then? So, say, Grease, for example, when Sandy comes out at the end, was that a big thing for you?
It was huge. I don't know, it's who I always, like, you know what, you should love her for who she is.
Absolutely.
I remember even as a little girl thinking, you know what, he should love her even if she's like playing
it's a terrible message
as,
for children.
As red as like all dolled up. But I did think, wow, look what you can do. It was Grease was a huge film as well. I loved it.
Right, so you're immersed in these films.
Yeah.
And then you are living in the 80s at this time?
Oh my God.
Growing up in the 80s.
All about the 80s. All about the 80s. Glamour, shoulder pads, more is more. Mm-hmm. You know, you walk in a room and you can smell someone's perfume who's been there
yes.
10 minutes ago. Poison and Dior. And my mum was a real glamazon, you know? She was a diplomat's wife in the 80s. So it was all kind of like parties at the Dorchester and giving me a kiss goodnight and then wafting out of the house. So I had a lot of glamour in my life yeah. and, you know, my mum always wore red lipstick and things like that. And
so were you trying it on yourself or were you just watching and absorbing?
I was always trying on myself because I would say, like, one of the first presents my mum ever bought me was a little beauty palette. And I literally died.
It was Where was it from?
I can't even remember. I think it was something cheap, like Argos or something. Okay. Okay. It was just like, go knock yourself out, Tate.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would just play with, it was just the colours, mm-hmm. I think. And I would just put makeup on myself. I'd put makeup on her. She used to let me cut her hair and put rollers in. Mm-hmm. I was just that kid always obsessed with beauty.
But the 80s wasn't a very culturally diverse time. Mm-hmm. Like, the role models were Kylie, Madonna.
Yes.
Bananarama?
For me, it was Grace Jones.
Okay.
Iman, mm-hmm. but what really irritated me, they were always sort of fetishized, you know? It was mm-hmm. like, you know, Tia Maria, the princess of the dark, you know?
It's yeah, all
like,
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
it was Grace Jones, like, I loved Conan. I watched all the movies I shouldn't have been allowed to watch, mm. so I loved Conan the Barbarian and Conan the Adventurer, all these really crazy movies, and Grace Jones was in that, and she was, I remember having a little mink tail, so it was always black women as a panther or an animal or a beautiful mystical creature, and I remember even then it irritated me, but that was all I got kind of thing, so yeah. I'm still a huge fan of Grace Jones, but it's the way
it's
black
other.
Yeah, black women, yeah, you're yeah. always other,
yeah,
you're always mystical, you're always sort of like a sexy animal, mm. so that irritated me, and I could see it even then, that was irritating, but you know, you get,
but now even more so.
Yeah, I mean, now that you have children.
Mm. So you have two children.
I've got twin girls who are delicious. They're six, Ola and Adana. Mm. And the things you can put up for yourself or the things you kind of bury for yourself, you say no. Because I think when you become a mother, you become a tiger.
Yeah.
And you can swallow a lot of stuff for yourself, but not for your children. You get very brave for your children. Mm. And I'm just like, no, I don't want them growing up the way I did. Always feeling sort of apologetic or ashamed about your hair or your otherness.
Mm.
And it's difficult being always other. You know, in my school, I was a black girl. Even I went to lovely, lovely schools, but you're always like one in a million yeah. or, you know, you're always, and my daughters go to a brilliant school, completely diverse, people from all over the place, amazing. But they still cry about not having hair like Elsa.
Yeah.
They still see themselves as other, and it bothers them because everyone, it's hard to be different.
Yeah, absolutely. And also as a child, you really feel that more.
Yeah.
So were you very aware of that when you were younger? Do you think you just buried it?
Oh, I was very aware. Mm. I was like, why don't I have hair like my friends? Like, why?
Were you asking these questions? Were you verbalizing them?
Yeah, my mom was freaking out, so she got me. My auntie who lived in America sent me a Barbie doll. I remember this one of the pivotal moments in my life. She's my mum of like an SOS across the Atlantic. Please help my child. And she sent me this black Barbie who looked like a prostitute.
Okay.
She had this big...
Great.
She had the big synthetic afro.
Okay.
She had like red lipstick, which no other Barbie had. And she kind of wore this kind of lace 70s disco inferno, I'm going to Studio 55 to blow something, you know, 54.
So not massively appropriate for a kid.
No! And I was just like, and that just kind of sums it all.
Yeah.
That even on that level, the Barbie has to be the sexy kind of prostitute, I'm going to go blow 10 guys in the club. It can't be glamorous. It can't be like, you know...
Or just even sweet.
It can't be sweet. Yeah.
It can't be like... It has to be something that is fierce.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Exactly.
Tell us about your first product.
Okay. First product, I would say, is Lip Smacker.
Okay.
Lip gloss from the 80s.
Okay.
I don't know, because this is the thing. My auntie used to send it over to me, and every time we went to America to visit family, I'd buy it, and it was just... It smelled so synthetic, so, like, over-perfumed, had little glitter bits in it. But it was just like a magic stick for me.
Was it in one of those rollerball?
Yeah, there's
dispensers.
They had a rollerball dispenser, yeah. But also, I also like the ones where it had a wand.
Right.
And I used to, and it was, I just found it so magical because it smelled of vanilla. I felt like a grown up and I just felt I've made it. I'm a grown woman. I may be 10, but I'm a grown goddamn woman.
Yeah. And that synthetic smell is so 80s. I remember like everything smelled like plastic then.
Yeah. And like all the grape rubbers, everything was about sniffing and putting things up your
nose. Multi-sensory. It was multi-sensory. Very strange.
Yeah. Just like smelly rubbers and all these smells and things. But I used to, and I mean, I went to live in America when I was little. I was in Florida when I was 11. Mm. And I went to live with family and my mum couldn't be there for various visa reasons. Mm. And so I was by myself. A lot of my childhood, I was alone. I felt very vulnerable. I felt very isolated. Mm. And I just remember whipping out the stick and smelling it and feeling comfort. So I realised a lot of things in my life is the search for comfort. Mm. And vanilla is very comforting. They even use it for addiction.
Well, it smells like baking as well.
Yeah.
Which is another comfort thing.
Yeah. Like you know, for rehab, they always say smell vanilla.
Do they?
Yeah. For like addiction, vanilla is very comforting. It helps with like if you're trying to quit smoking or something. Mm-hmm. And I realised then I was probably self-medicating with this vanilla.
At a very young age.
Yeah, at a very young age with this vanilla. And any time I felt bad, I would just like whip it on and feel good. So that connection between feeling good and feeling safe and beauty was very early.
Right.
Yeah.
And what was making you feel bad? Was it this sense of otherness or were there other things going on? I mean, I know there was your parents' divorce, which was obviously stressful.
My parents' divorce, I was literally, it was like as if an alien abducted you and put you in a different planet. Mm. I was in this high school in Florida in the 80s, which, God bless Florida, but it was the back end of beyond. Mm. It was redneck city. And, you know, my brother almost got beaten up for talking to a blonde cheerleader. And coming from London, we had never experienced that. Everyone was from everywhere. You wouldn't be threatened just speaking to someone, you know.
So there was a lot of racism then?
A lot of racism. Yeah. A lot of, like, people were very highly sexualized. I remember at 11, everyone's talking about blowjobs. And I was like, what? I was like, you know, I was such a little girl. I was such a little prim and proper girl. And I remember people would steal my stuff and I was very bored. It was just weird. I just was like, what the hell am I doing? Where am I? And then my family situation at home was quite aggressive. I didn't feel I was wanted. You know, I mean, God bless my aunt and uncle, but I was kind of dumped there with my brother. So it was just a lot of very traumatic stuff going on.
You wanted to medicate from them, really.
And it was just, I was very isolated as a child. Yeah. So that, hence the retreat into film, into beauty, into things which were beautiful.
And what about writing? When did that come in?
I remember writing my first book when I was 9.
You wrote your first book when you were 9?
It was so obnoxious.
No wonder you're so awfully accomplished.
I wrote my first book at 9. Yeah.
What was it about? Do you remember?
Do you want to know how creepy this is?
I really do.
It was about twins. I didn't know that there were loads of twins in the family. Mm. I just had a thing about writing about a set of twins, a boy and a girl twin who lived in a haunted house and how they had seen apparitions. I don't know what the hell I was on.
Sounds like a good horror film.
It's quite, yeah, I love horror. And I remember writing this at 9, which is probably not good. But and I remember drawing, I made it and I drew the front cover and I wrote my name on it. And I was always, I always loved stories and writing, but probably more stories than writing, I'm going to be honest.
So you're taking yourself away into magical worlds.
Yes, out
of your life. So tell me then about going to Bristol.
So Bristol was amazing.
Did you move back to the UK before that? Or...
Yeah, we moved back to the UK around 12.
Okay.
And then I was here until A-levels. And then should I say the whole story?
Yeah,
by all means. So, like, I got into Oxford.
Yeah.
I completely, can I swear? Completely,
of course, swear
completely
away.
Fucked up my geography A level.
Okay.
Thought my life was going to end. And I cried for a week because I was like, how? It was so bad. My geography A level was so bad. They're like, I'm sorry, we would have taken you if it was like a little bit higher. But like,
you really had your sights set on Oxford?
I didn't think I'd get into Oxford. I didn't want to go to Oxford, but I did it because my headmistress at the time said they didn't want my kind. I'll show you. Yes.
Sorry, how did she say that to you?
She said it just like that. She said...
Did you cry?
No, I was very lucky because I had such a tough upbringing. No one scared me. I'm quite fearless. It's like if my parents can kind of like rock my world, who the hell are you to talk to me? And I remember saying to her, oh, I'm thinking about applying here, there, whatever. And she's like, oh, they don't want your kind. And I said, what kind is that? The A student?
Yeah.
And she had nothing to say. And so just to say kind of fuck you, I applied and I was the only one who got in. And then she avoided me in the halls. And when I saw her, I said, oh, hello. And she said, oh, who's a clever girl then? And I said, I am. And so the whole point was just
good
to like,
you.
It was a kind of like, oh, no, I don't think so. So, but, you know, when I got in, I was like, oh, actually, this is quite good. And so when I tanked my geography, it was devastating.
Mm.
And I just thought, my whole life is over. Everything's horrific. I'm never like, how do I bounce back from this? And then I got into Bristol and then I walked in the lecture. And in the first lecture of Bristol, I met my husband. And I went, oh, okay.
Did you know it straight away?
Yeah, I'm really witchy. So okay. I saw him and I said, if that... And it was a crowded hall. It was a crowded hall, about 200 people. He was 20 minutes late because he was like that. He's gangster, didn't care. He walked in and he had a hat which said Africa on. And he's like this tall, blonde public school boy. And I thought, wanker. And I thought, oh my God, if that wanker boy walks over to me, we're going to get married.
Did he walk over to you?
Like a heat-seeking missile.
Really?
So weird. And so he walked over to me and he was like, hey, what's up?
And what? You thought, you're the one.
I did. I was just like, oh, God, what's going on? And I remembered then thinking, oh, okay, that's why I didn't go to Oxford, because I've met my husband here. I really believe in fate. And I think you have a lot of control over decisions. But I do think think some things are out of your hands. And I was like, oh, okay, that's why that happened.
Tell us about your second product.
My second product is... Let me just have a little look-see. That's so fascinating doing this. I was like going through my Rolodex of beauty products.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a big one for me. This was a like amen moment. Viva Las Vegas, which is a lipstick from NARS, 1994.
What colour is it?
I don't think it's around anymore, but it's kind of this metallic pink. And it was like, on me, it was a nude. Mm. It was a really pretty nude. And I remember walking into Brook Street, where Space NK was, in 94. And at this point, going to Selfridges, going to Harrods, going to Harvey Nichols, mostly was a very traumatic experience for me. Because,
why?
You know, you'd have women saying, oh, sorry, dear, we don't have your colour. Black girls don't do pink. That's another thing that has really traumatized me. Black girls don't do pink. Black girls don't blush. It'd be ridiculous to even try a blush on you. So all these negative, like, so the beauty hall was like, I would say it's like paradise in a prison. Paradise in terms of there were all these colors, and you know, when MAC and Shoe Imra came, it was like woohoo. But then it was also, you know, a lot of like reinforcing that you are other, not for you, we don't care, you're not good enough.
And taking all the fun and play out of beauty and making it about this is what you should be doing.
Exactly.
Awful.
So when I walked into Space NK, it was like my church. A beautiful, serene, created space of products. And when I first discovered NARS there, it was just mind-blowing because he had very dark colours for foundations. All the pigments were super rich. And I talk back in the 90s when I was a teenager, you'd put something on, you'd put an eyeshadow on, and it was like dust. It was like ash. It wouldn't even show up on my skin.
Mm-hmm.
So to go to a counter where you put one slick and it was colour true was just mind-blowing for me. And to find a pretty nude pinky lip colour that on me looked very natural was just mind-blowing. And I still have it. I still have it in my little
is it
archive.
Worn down?
Little worn, like a little stump.
tiny stump.
And it just means so much to me. It was just so fabulous and reinforcing what I felt on the inside about myself.
Yeah.
Which was glamour and fun and aspirational and luxury. When other people were talking about like nutmeg and chestnut and espresso.
And just shoving you into that.
And all this. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I am, you know.
I'm all those wonderful things. I'm Studio 54.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was very important to me.
Yeah.
And I love NARS to this day.
Okay. So you've graduated from uni.
Mm-hmm.
You have your degree in history.
Yeah.
You have your man.
Yes.
Tell me what happened next.
So I thought I thought, God, what's the most artistic, businessy thing I could do? Because no one tells you about the fun jobs. So I thought advertising. And I did a course in Watford, which was like one of the best at the time in advertising. And I hated every minute of it, apart from the projects where you got to do like an advertorial, you know, like advertising campaign. It was always beauty.
Okay. advertise so much. Yeah.
I was just like always doing beauty campaigns in my homework. And I remember making this compact. And to get into this course, I did a Chanel compact and wrote in every section the things about me and all this marketing stuff.
Well, that sounds great.
And I sold myself through a compact, which is how I got onto the course. And I remember just doing this project, and this girl said to me, "Why are you here? Why are you here? You hate this." And I was like, "Yeah, I know." But I'm not a quitter. I've never walked away from anything. So even though I didn't like, and then I went and I got myself some work experience at Saatchi & Saatchi, and I really didn't like it.
So when you're going in every day and you're hating it, what's motivating you?
I'm not a quitter, but, you know, I was very lost and I just suddenly thought, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to quit. And it was the first time in my life I ever quit, but it was actually a really powerful moment for me. I was very lost and I said to my mum, "What am I going to do?" Mm. And my mum gave me the best advice in the world. She said, "Make your hobby your job and you never feel like you're working." I was like, "Oh, God, okay, I can knock out an essay and I love beauty. Is that a job?" And my first ever job in the world was at InStyle.
Was it now?
Yes.
Tell me how you got that job.
So the first issue launched.
Okay.
And I was a big fan of American InStyle. I was always reading American magazines. Mm-hmm. And I called up Carmel Allen, who is amazing. And I sort of phone stalked her for 2 weeks.
By that, you mean you called repeatedly?
Yes. Yes.
How many times?
Just politely.
Okay.
Polite stalking.
You were nudging.
I was just like, "Hello, hello, hello, hello." And I sort of said, "Oh, you know, I live around the corner. Can I please come in with my CV? You know, I can be there in 5 minutes." And she's like, "Okay, sure, come." And I didn't know at the time where it was, so I was just bluffing. And I just thought, like, I just jumped in a taxi and got there.
Yeah.
And then I remember speaking to a lovely lady called Elizabeth, who I'm still friends with. And we had a conversation about Chanel makeup. She's like, "Chanel makeup, discuss." And I was like, "Sweet Jesus, there is a place for me in the world."
I'm sorted.
And then I was working for Estée Lauder, the bureau where you work as a consultant.
Okay.
They train you across all the brands. And I thought of myself as a Charlie's Angel of beauty. So if there's a beauty emergency, I'd rush to Harrods or something.
Lipstick wielding.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
And I'd be on counter. And that's the part I really loved. I loved talking to women and hearing all their stories. Because it was like being a bartender, you know? It's like women really reveal themselves and talk. You know, beauty is so important. And I was working at the bureau, and then I went to bed completely depressed because I was like, there is a place for me. There is a place where I can talk about Chanel makeup. Mm. I can be creative and artistic, and this is acceptable. And this is not only is acceptable, you will excel. And I was really depressed, and I completely did a bunk, and I didn't go to work the next day because I was like, no. And I thought, oh, I was just so depressed that I wasn't part of this world.
Right.
And they called me.
Okay.
The day I did a bunk, they called me saying, "Can you come in? Someone's sick." And I was like, "Yeah." And then I came in the next day, and then the next day. And Carmel was like, "Oh, just stay forever, Atto." And
incredible.
That's how I got my first job in beauty. And then it was
amazing. What year was that?
2001.
So at that point, did you feel like the colour of your skin had any impact in working in the beauty industry? Or in journalism?
I mean, I have been lucky because I've had the best education money can buy. Mm. And what that does for you, it gives you Teflon coating. It makes you feel like you're the master of the universe. It gives you a kind of like, no, what I say is important.
Mm. That's hence all those Etonians in government.
My God, people who really shouldn't be there.
No, but
God damn
confidence.
It.
Confidence, it's
it's confidence. So yeah. I always had confidence in myself and my ability.
Yeah.
And I always felt I should be somewhere based on my ability.
Mm.
And I was very lucky that I found I have found kindred spirits in this industry who saw me.
Mm.
Carmel was one of them, Kathleen Bird-Murray at Tatler. Mm. And these are really amazing women who, after I had interviews with them, I said to my mum, if I didn't work there, I just want to have a coffee with them. I remember saying that, going, I just want to hang out with these people because they're cool.
It's the most incredible thing if you can think that about your colleagues or the people in your industry, that you actually would want to be friends with them.
So I've been very lucky that the people who have helped me in this industry have seen me.
Mm.
Yeah, so I've been, yeah.
And that's not been an issue.
Yeah.
What's your third product?
Third product is MAC Face and Body. in N9. Now, this was a, like, I went to school in Knightsbridge. Mm-hmm. I went to a Catholic girls' school in Knightsbridge. I lived in Harvey Nichols.
Okay.
I lived by the Harvey.
You've really been all over. Yeah.
I lived by the Mac counter, mm-hmm. and I could never afford anything, so they'd always just pour it into this little, they used to have little white pots.
So when you're a beauty lover and you have no money, yes. those little free things mean everything to you.
Sacred.
Yeah, sacred.
So I used to go up there every couple of weeks and have them pour little samples into this pot. Yeah. And I used to live off that. Foundation when you're darker is always horrific because it is to try to find your colour. Things are too ashy. Things are too orange and angry. You know, a lot of colour. I mean, I'm 39 and I still don't have the colour I'm in love with.
Really?
No. Or a concealer.
Okay.
I'm always blending, I'm always mixing, because maybe the coverage is great,
yeah.
but I don't like the fact it has, you know, certain chemicals, or it's like, you know, or it's too perfumed for me, or something, or a formula is really great, but it's matte, because I don't know why people are obsessed with doing darker colours matte, because I think darker skin tones can be oily, and therefore companies assume everyone wants to be matte. No, I love radiance. I'm gonna glow. So finding,
and you want the choice.
And I want the choice. So it's literally like the Goldilocks of foundation. It's really difficult.
What are you wearing now? Because your skin looks really glowy now.
Oh, thank you. This is Bobbi Brown, who I love. Their cushion.
They were one of the first ranges that really did all skin tones well.
Yes, and also didn't have a pinky undertone. They understood about undertones. Because I think with darker skin, people get overexcited. Because dark skin can take so much makeup, it is very exciting to do an electric blue peacock on me.
I was about to say, when makeup artists
get
your face, do they go, oh, can we just slick on some metallic blue eyeshadow or green?
I tell you what, I think makeup is like being an assassin. Like Leon.
Okay.
Stay with me.
I am.
So, you know, have you seen the movie Leon?
I have.
Yeah. So, you know, when he trains her to be a killer.
Isn't that, what's her name?
Natalie Portman.
That's it, yeah.
He says, you start out with the rifle.
Yeah.
And then you end with the knife.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can always tell a great makeup artist, because simple is hard.
Yes.
To do a natural, buffed, beautiful, simple you, but just a little bit better, is the hardest makeup. It's the knife of makeup artistry, assassinhood. So I can always tell a makeup artist, because they see me, they pull it back, they don't get overexcited, and they do beautiful, naturally glossy makeup for me.
Yeah.
It's always a marker of someone who's really good, where they suppress the need to put an acid orange on me, and instead they do like a buffed bronzy taupe or something.
Washes of colour.
Exactly.
Yeah, lovely.
Like, for me, my icon is like Kate Moss in the 90s, that... But for me, but you know, that's what I'm still searching for, that look on me, on a dark skin.
It's hard when it's like when you go into the hairdresser and you go, oh, I have this picture. And by the way, I know that I don't look at all like Kate Moss, obviously, blah, blah, blah. But that vibe, could you get that vibe?
And then we think that you do like that. I mean,
that you want exactly that. You're like, no, I want the vibe.
I want the vibe, the mood.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Glossy, natural, juicy, pumped up, glossy skin. Natural makeup, me at 19, after I've been dancing all night and splashed my face with water.
The dream.
That's the
dream. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Dream.
The titles you've written for, when I was looking at them, I was like, what did you do? So you were at InStyle and then you just decided to go freelance? Or?
I went to Tatler for a year and a bit. And then at about 23. I think, probably 23.
So you're young.
Yeah, I think when you're young, you're very fearless as well. Because you think, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
You know, and... also, like, in my life, the worst thing has happened. So it can't really get any worse than what I've been through age 8. Yeah. So, like, who cares?
Plus, you're so ridiculously positive. Oh, yeah. Like, it's just you.
So,
yeah.
So I was like, well, what's the worst can happen? So I went freelance 23, I think I was 24. First month, I got, like, a Sunday Times Style, a Daily Mail.
Were you pitching?
Yeah.
And how did you find that process? Was that scary or difficult? Or
not at all. I'm half Nigerian. I think it's, like, the law to not be scared.
You knock down those doors.
To knock down the doors and to be, I don't want to say aggressive, but, like, I want what I want. Mm-hmm. I'm not scared. I tell you what, I'm not scared of rejection.
That's interesting.
I'm not scared of rejection when I know what I'm saying has value. Does that make sense?
Yes, but it also makes sense that if you're not scared of rejection, you're much less likely to be rejected because you're not coming from a place of fear. You're coming from a place of passion. It's a very different thing to feel like I've got something I want to do and to approach someone. It resonates in a way that's different to being meek and scared and nervous. It's a very
different thing. I'm more afraid of failure.
Okay. Overall or in...
Yeah, I'm more afraid of failure than I am of rejection. Okay. Does that make sense? It's weird.
So that spurs you on.
Yeah. Like a burning desire not to fail.
If your copy then comes back with corrections or people say, well, I didn't love that, redo it. How are you fine with that?
No, I find it devastating.
Okay, but you keep going.
Yeah, like devastating. I'd be really upset about it. But then I'm also a people pleaser. So that kind of helps as well. Mm. So like, you know, I want to make sure it's I'm servicing that person.
Yeah.
So I think being a kind of like OCD, compulsive, people pleasing, overachiever is very good for in this industry.
Yeah. Yeah, because you'll also work loads for very little money at times. Exactly. That's another thing about it.
Yeah.
Let's do your fourth product before we go into what's going on in your life now.
Fourth product would have to be, this is very difficult because I was thinking, because I love colour so much, I was thinking, I was saying about how Shooter Moreau was really important to me. I got to meet him and I almost had a breakdown and cry. He was such a beautiful, serene man and such an artist. And I think artistry is a really big thing for me.
Mm.
It's like one of my daughters, we take her to pottery. She's so sensorial. Mm. She's always like, from the minute this child was born, she was stuffing stuff, you know, smearing food and feeding sand and mud. And I can see that in myself in that I love the sensation of colour. And I remember Shu Imra in Harvey Nichols, it was just like a playground.
Yeah.
And the fact that everything had such high pigment that looked good on my skin, it literally makes me feel very happy. Anytime I'm depressed or sad, I will go to a makeup counter and look at colours.
So that's like your Tiffany's.
Yeah, it's colour therapy.
Yeah.
And just smear and put it all over my hand. And if I come back with my hands full of makeup, that's a good day for me.
Yeah.
That makes me feel really happy.
Yeah.
And so I would say, and I remember the first colour I ever bought was like an iridescent pink. To say, again, fuck you to that woman who said I could wear pink.
Did you go in wearing your pink and be like, no. You should have done.
It was an iridescent pink and it looked white in the pot.
Yeah.
And then you smeared it on your hand and it became this warm, rich pink, which just literally popped on my skin.
And an eyeshadow.
And that's the magic of makeup. So it looked white and it looked like I should have no business near my skin.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put it on, it was like, come and you're welcome. In that one product, it's why I love beauty.
Yeah.
It's like, this is for you. It's magic because it's not what it appears to be.
Yeah.
It's fun and playful. And it made me feel good about myself.
And it's so transformative.
Yeah.
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 So are you a makeup everyday person now?
Yes.
Is that your playtime in the morning?
It's my fun. It's like, I think there's, a lot of women have hysterical beauty where it's like, oh, I could never get a pint of milk without a full set of lashes. And I don't get that. I can walk around with no makeup. I'm not bothered.
Your bare face isn't a thing of fear for you. It's more that the makeup is joy.
Makeup is joy. Makeup is fun. Makeup is an expression of who I am and what I'm feeling. And I always used to like because at my school we had no school uniform, which was really weird. Mm-hmm. And like every day I would come dressed as a character.
It sounds really like in my own head.
I'd be like, oh, sailor. Yeah. You know, like a French sailor meets a this, meets a that.
Do you know what? I still dress a bit like that. Like I sometimes feel in the morning. Today I'm feeling like, I don't really think this is how I dress. I just think, oh, I'll dress a little bit like this person or that person.
Yeah, like characters.
Yeah, like characters, yeah.
So I always loved that. You know, I remember like I had a grey beret with a berry lip one, you know.
Amazing.
Like, you know, and like, you know, all these, like, I always used to dress as a character or something fun or.
And you have got all those classic film references as well, as there's so much in the bank.
Oh my God, so many like feline flicks and all these things. Yeah. So makeup has always been fun for me.
Yeah.
It's been playtime and it's been about expressing yourself in a healthy way.
So this brings me quite neatly to your blog.
Yes.
I want to read the mission statement before I talk to you about it, because I find it extraordinary and I was really quite moved by it. Okay, so Atta's written, I created Jewel Tones Beauty for my daughters. So one day when they're teenagers and young women, they will never feel the way I felt. When I walked into a beauty hall, I felt unrepresented and neglected. I want to invoke change in the beauty industry so there is choice and a celebration of darker skin tones and not just token products and services. I don't want to feel like I'm diverse, like I'm other and a strange category. I'm here, I'm normal, I'm relevant, I'm empowered, and I demand to be catered to with respect and creativity. I want that for my daughters and for you. I grew up ashamed and estranged from my hair, and I don't want that for them. No, not on my watch. Mama's going to make a change. This site is to enable women around the world to feel beautiful, empowered, playful, creative, balanced, peaceful, and full of positivity through the amazing medium of beauty. I welcome your views, experiences, and interaction. That's quite a mission statement.
Oh, thanks.
Tell me first about the messaging of beauty being an amazing medium, which I know you've explained now, but lots of people attribute a lot of negativity and a lot of you should be, this is the way to beauty. So how do you reconcile those two separate views?
I mean, it's very, I think, as a history student, I know that beauty has been, there's a lot of suspicion around beauty. It's very puritanical. If you want to really get into it, it's around King James, and there's all these laws were passed.
What year was him?
Like 1600.
16, okay.
And it was all about suspicion and trickery. Makeup was a form of trickery. And if you think about people who had venereal diseases and the pox, you'd put a little beauty mark to hide, and then you know, if you spent the evening with them and then got a rash, it's like, you have literally tricked me.
But people still say that on Twitter. I find that so annoying when people are like, oh, this is her without makeup, how different she looks. Duh. Obviously.
It's ridiculous.
There's paint on her face.
So I find that kind of like a misogyny of like women's tricks. It's very kind of, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas, it's very medieval, that women are these sirens who will make men destroy their kingdoms and their loyalty through their, you know, vaginas and their artful makeup. So I see when people talk to me like that, I'm like, oh, you don't even know where this is coming from, but this is where it's coming from, medieval misogyny, but whatever. I mean, for me, there has never been a culture or a time or a people who have not celebrated or expressed who they were through without beauty. So if you have like tattooing in, like, you know, Polynesia, you know, that is a form of expression of being a warrior, of artfulness.
Yeah.
You have you know, like Native Americans who, you know, you have war paint, and you have all these different ceremonies and rituals. I'm all about rituals and how we celebrate who we are and what we think we are through different mediums of, like, what you pray to, what you worship, how you worship, how you adorn yourself. It's all about the inside. It's all about the spirit, which is really interesting.
Mm.
Like, I mean, I've had so many dinner parties where people think I'm really dumb.
Why?
It's because they think you're stupid if you do beauty. It's like you've messed up on something.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you could have been that, but you had to do this. And I'm like, no, I choose it with a whole heart. And I always say to people, you know, when you go to, when people in the Second World War were taken to a death camp, or any time in any part of history where you were taken to a concentration camp or a death camp, what are the first two things they do to you?
What are they?
They shave your head and they take your clothes. Because that is the first step to dehumanize you. It is very easy to kill you when I can take these things away from you and dehumanize you, because it is a huge thing of what makes you a person. And I think, I don't see how there is anything more powerful than that.
No, and the sense of self.
The sense of self. You go to the army, they take you, they change your clothes, they shave your head because they want to break you down and build you up in an image that they need. It is fundamental. And I mean, I was talking to a doctor at a party once and I said, you know, what you do is amazing to be a doctor, but you could patch someone up all day long, but if they want to die and kill themselves, it's kind of pointless. Do you know what I mean? It's like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's my territory,
yeah.
Which is spirit, self-esteem, how you see yourself, how you express yourself, and how, you know, so, you know, one isn't without the other.
Yeah, and also it can still be a balm for, so sorry, I'm just thinking, because when my aunt died when I was about 10 or 11, one of the things that I did as a child who was really ill-equipped to cope with grief was to spend a long time. Do you remember spectacular nail polishes?
Yeah.
Many colours.
Yes.
I used to have maybe 50 in all colours. And I spent a long time deciding whether I should wear sparkly black, which I think was called Onyx Sparkle, or just plain black to the funeral.
Yeah.
This was my coping mechanism, but it was hugely important to me.
Yeah.
And I still remember that moment as being something, it was something real to cling to that also gave me a sense of self. This was my way of going to an event.
It's so important.
Yeah.
And you're channeling so much through it. It's so important the way you see yourself, the way you express yourself, and it can be, and people express themselves, even though people who are not interested in beauty or fashion, every day they're making choices, which say they are.
Do you find also though that people will sometimes go, oh yeah, I'm not really into the beauty industry, but then they will then also go, but could you just tell me what the best anti-wrinkle eye cream is?
Yes. Yeah, or I have a lot, it's all rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's all rubbish. It's all, like, beauty creams, it's all lies and rubbish. And I'm like, well, that's a little bit like me saying, like a foodie, this lady who was a huge foodie, she said, oh, the beauty industry, it's all rubbish and lies, and all these expensive creams, it's all rubbish. And I said, that's a little bit like me saying, food is rubbish. Like, I'm a big foodie. It's like saying there's no difference between a turkey escalope you have in Milan and a turkey Twizzler.
Yeah.
It's like calories in, calories out, it's all turkey, like organic, hand grown with butter and natural ingredients, other chemical, like, you know, whatever. I'm like, you know, there's a huge spectrum. Of course there's like a lot of snake oil in this industry like there is in every industry, and of course there's a lot of artisan beautiful spiritual products too, and to lump everything in the same category is just stupid.
So many people level all these awful accusations at social media about it being, you know, an awful place to be, a place of abuse, all of this. And yet, again, you're overwhelmingly positive on social media. And it seems that you get a lot of positivity back.
Yeah.
So is that just your approach?
I mean, I believe in karma. You get what you receive what you give. I mean, I've been trolled, and I think it's, I mean, I've been trolled on the, like, I did an article for the Daily Mail years ago about fertility envy, because I lost a lot of friends when I was pregnant. Something people never talk about, because I think fertility is such another huge issue. And I wrote this whole article saying I lost a lot of friends. A lot of people were saying, it's not fair, you're having twins, I'm doing IVF and all this. It was horrible, and I lost about two or very strange, and there was a huge outpouring, because it was I think I pricked something that people hadn't spoken about, and all, I had loads and loads of comments. And one of the comments was, oh, she looks like an American footballer playing dress up, which to this day I find horrifically funny. Sorry.
I'm astounded that people talk to people like that.
No, so funny. You know what? If you say it to my face, I will accept it. I'm quite hard like that. That doesn't bother me.
Okay.
I found it.
Did you reply?
I didn't, because I was a bit scaredy cat at the time. Yeah. It was about 5 years ago, and I didn't. It was the beginning of social media. Yeah. I wish I had now, but my husband says you're very Nigerian. You have a very good sense of you, like, if it's funny, you can say anything. You can be offensive as long as it's funny. That's my standard, my golden rule.
I think that's also actually. I my parents are foreign, so I don't really have this. But you know, I see a lot of in British families when they're like, "Oh, come over here," you know, "you fool," or you know, they're very rude to each other's about looks and things, or like, you know, "you skinny twit" and things like that. And I find that hilarious, but only if it's said with love.
Yeah,
and I think that's the difference.
That's the difference. I mean, my Teflon coping, that doesn't bother me. But in terms of social media, I find it to be, and like everything, you know, heaven and hell, the heaven side of social media is an incredibly sharing place.
Yes.
When people are generous with who they are and with their spirit, and that's a really very inspirational thing for me. Also, when I started to transition with my hair, which means I went from straight, relaxed hair to natural hair.
Okay. And that's where you are now.
Exactly, which was only about 2 years ago.
Okay.
So, like, up until 37, I had weaves, like braids. I had straightened my hair. I never had my own natural hair out.
Okay.
It was something to be ashamed of. Like my mom would say, Atta, your roots are showing. Go sort yourself out. Sort yourself out.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
do not present yourself to the world like that. Yeah.
But how do you feel then about stars who, like, you know, I'm thinking Beyonce, although I know that she's a great role model, but I just mean because she'll often have, like, long fake hair on or weaves on.
You know what? I say, do whatever you want, just as long as it comes from a place of empowerment.
Okay.
So for me, having all these things was to hide, was shame.
Mm.
Now, the same as putting on a red lipstick, a nude lipstick, you know, like a purple lipstick, a black lipstick. I don't care. Just as long as it's like, I love my lips.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I'm saying? So yeah. I think for me, it didn't come from a positive place.
Right.
And I started to feel good about my hair and about these things through social media. There's a natural hair movement. People are talking about recipes for Afro hair, for textured hair, like mixing shea butters and oils, and all these, because hair is culture. And all this lost culture through slavery, through lots of different things, through, you know, people losing the art of sitting in circles, chatting with your aunties, very African, you know, chatting with your aunties and your mothers, you know, doing each other's hair. All these things were lost. And I found, in a new digital way, was being recreated. So I had no idea how to look after my hair as a grown woman. My mum had no idea how to look after my hair. And so she relaxed my hair at 8 because she just couldn't cope.
Yeah.
But if she had was online, like 30 years ago, and, you know, Mavis from Atlanta, Georgia, gave her a fantastic recipe that would soften my hair and be able to, like, twist it at night, it would have been a different world, maybe.
Yeah.
So I find that really encouraging.
The community really is
community.
There.
Community. Yeah. I find that really amazing. Yes, I mean, there's a lot of narcissism. There's a lot, this, you know, taking 1,000 pictures of yourself every day is probably not the healthiest thing.
But it's a huge minefield in beauty. So I posted a selfie today, but I find it's a minefield because on the one hand, your face with things on it is part of the conversation, and yet taking pictures of yourself does feel slightly narcissistic. And then at the same time, why should I not put a picture of my face? It's a very confusing, blurred line.
I mean, for me, I was trying to find a picture of myself as a teenager, and I found two. Because we did take pictures. I had like a throwaway camera. Yeah. It cost a fortune to go to Boots and develop it. And I was like...
And they'd often be blurry anyway.
And they would be blurry. Yeah. And I was like, I literally have 10 pictures of myself in my teen years.
Mm.
And it is quite shocking. But then at the same time, it's really fun. It's empowering. Who cares? It's like, I think if you... You know, and it's for me, it's intention. I think everything is intention. If you want to put an image of yourself and share, look, this looks amazing, that's who I am.
Yeah,
I was always a girl in school going, I found an amazing raspberry red, which would look great on you. That was who I was. And I could just do that to more people.
Yeah,
that's where I come from.
Yeah, so you just want to share.
I want to share.
That's your thing. Share your fifth product with us.
Oh my god.
While we're on the
fifth
subject
product, this is a toss-up between a Bobbi Brown blush, which I'm obsessed by, called Chocolate Cherry.
Is it a pot rouge?
It's a pot rouge.
Mm-hmm.
What is amazing about this is that it's, again, I've been told so many times in my childhood, blush is not for black girls, you can't do pinks, you can't do berries. It is a really beautiful, natural blush for dark skin. It's not crazy, it's not, it's just me, like, after I've been running in the park, or just me healthy, happy, glowing, which is my favourite makeup. I'm a natural makeup girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, it's the angel singing again, that I had a cream texture, something fun and beautiful and aspirational that looks natural and pretty. Yeah. I just want to look pretty.
Yeah.
I don't want to look fierce. I don't want to look fab. I don't want to,
you're
like,
not the Barbie.
I'm not a Barbie. I don't have a spear in my hand. I don't have a whip. I'm not a superhero, like, you know, vixen. I'm not kind of like, you know, you know, not Jackie Brown, though I can be on a certain day.
Yeah.
But day to day, I just want to look pretty, and it makes me look pretty. And I really appreciate that. The other product I love Aromatherapy Associates.
Mm.
I am a very sensorial, Like, smell, I have a really crazy sense of smell.
Do you?
Like, crazy, like a bloodhound. My husband's okay. like, I can never cheat. You know where, when, and what fragrance she was wearing.
Okay.
I'm yep. like, who's that tramp with yeah. the Chanel allure?
Who did you kiss the other day? Yeah.
Limited edition.
Yeah.
I've got a really crazy keen sense of smell. So candles are really important to me. Mm-hmm. Essential oils are really important to me. And mm-hmm. also, I'm always looking for mood shifting. Because I think I'm quite moody, if I'm mm-hmm. going to be honest. I can mm-hmm. be quite... I think I'm quite a naturally, I think a lot. I'm very introspective.
Mm.
I would say I'm a sociable loner. So right. I really love people, but I really like being by myself.
So you have an artistic temperament then?
Probably, yeah.
Like a classically artistic
yeah.
temperament.
Yeah, and I can be very low. I can be very depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I can be very angry. I'm very moody. Mm-hmm. I think people don't really know that about me. Because
you're very friendly and bubbly and
yeah, yeah, I mean, I like people, but then in my private time I can be incredibly moody. Mm-hmm. Ask my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, mood shifting products really I love. So like they have the deep relax, these things which literally
that's like alchemy. I mean, it just does amazing things.
Probably the Valium or something. Yeah. Not like, yeah. I don't do drugs, but like if you want yeah. to pop prescription pills, it's like that.
It's incredible.
It will knock you out. It makes yeah. your whole house smell amazing. So I think essential oils, good quality essential oils.
Yes.
Think from like S-Bar, Aromatherapy Associates, things where I can be relaxed in a bath and just to breathe and to be by myself.
Mm-hmm.
That is really important. You know what? It's creating a semi-spiritual sacred space.
Yes. Which is the dream.
Which is the dream. And I think that is a product which really helps you do that. So it's a toss-up between blush, which is an everyday joy.
Yeah.
And this bath, which is a sacred, semi-religious space for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere you go to
yes.
be.
Yes.
So I'm going to hope, well, hopefully this will be a positive note to yeah. finish on. Do you feel like there have been positive changes made in the industry under your watch in the time that you've been in the beauty industry?
Huge. I mean, things are so different. I mean, I was telling this, chatting to an influencer who's like, I think she was barely 21. And we were talking about foundations, and she's like, I told her, when I was your age sometimes yeah. brands only had four colors
yeah.
and she looked at me like I was insane
yeah.
She's like, nah, she didn't believe it. I'm like, you would go to a counter and sometimes they'd have 4 to 6 shades
yeah.
and I'm talking major beauty companies
yeah.
and now it's the rush to do 30, you know there's so many people who do so many great colors.
Mm.
Not only that, in the advertising, you know, the darker skinned girl is not the sort of one in the background being the backup cheerleader to the main girl in the advertorial. It feels very mm-hmm. equal. There's women with curly hair. There's like my daughter's a mixed heritage. My mm-hmm. husband's blonde, blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's girls who represent them. So that is hugely positive. But on the other hand, I still think there aren't colours. There's a lot of tokenism, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you go, when the colours go darker, you see there's Beyonce and there's Grace Jones.
Yeah.
And there's kind of nothing. It's like, tick, tick, we've done
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like I had a PR once come up to me and it's she said to me, oh, Ajay, we're so excited. We've got 3 more colours for darker skin tones. And it's this thing of you should be grateful.
Yeah.
It's that gratitude. Aren't you yeah. excited? We've got 3 new colours for dark skin. And she said, how do you feel about it? And I said, if you had 3 colours to choose from, how would you feel about it? And yeah. she went, oh, shit.
Yeah, great.
And when you start thinking about it in how you would feel,
yeah.
it starts to get crazy.
Yeah.
So, like, you've got you and all your friends and family, every girl you know, have 3 colours to choose from. Do you think that's cool?
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane.
And be grateful for that. Because that's new.
I mean, it is mind-boggling, isn't it? And the idea yeah. that was worse.
And it was worse. People were actively hostile.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was on counter, I had loads of women come to me because I looked very natural. And they were like, oh, that must be for me. There's a huge suspicion when mm-hmm. you have darker skin tones because you're just so used to not being catered to properly, not being spoken to services properly, to being patronized, the electric blue factor.
Mm.
And so it's I always think women with darker skin tones have always been their own makeup artists because mm. you've had to be
mm.
you've had to be more educated than the girl on the counter because what they just don't have a clue. They're aggressive. Mm. It's a different world today with social media. You can educate yourself in a way that you couldn't before.
Mm.
Like when I began my career, people would come to the counter clutching an article I wrote going, oh, I want this article,
yeah.
Which was used to fill me like that was so, I was so proud of that. But then now, you know, women go to the counter just to rubber seal their decision on a product, and they often have more knowledge than the person selling it to them.
Absolutely.
And I think I like that it's democratic.
Yeah.
I like that kind of equality. All the gatekeepers have come crushing down through technology.
Yeah.
You know, my daughters will never have someone say, you can't do that, you can't do this, pink isn't for black girls, you can't do a blush, you can't do this. They are so empowered with information, with everything, in a way I didn't have access mm-hmm. to until I got in the beauty industry. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's also a credit to you, because you're right at the A, at the helm, telling people mm. it's not good enough, and B, looking yeah. after your daughters, making sure they're empowered.
Yeah, I think thank you, and I think it's very important. I mean, it's a daily battle. I was just saying on the way here, one of my daughters was crying because she's like, people will look at me and laugh if I have my hair down. So she's 6 years old, and she already has this image of being laughed at and other, and she said, oh mummy, I hate my hair down, it looks like a bird's nest. And I'm like, where are you getting this language from?
Yeah.
A bird's nest. No one has ever spoken to you like this. Mm-hmm. And it was someone, you know, some little kid somewhere had said it to her. So you are just, your whole life you have to battle against the noise that society is telling you
yeah.
to try and find. So I mean, growing up being black or being other is so difficult, because not only are you battling trying to find out who you are, but you have to battle and wade through all the crap of what other people are telling you you are, and that's what is exhausting.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, because you've got to find yourself, and that's already
and
very
also
hard.
Reject what yeah. people are telling you you are,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is often uneducated, lazy, disenfranchised, having no power. All these things just based on your skin. My husband, I came home going, oh God, I got followed around a shop today, asked, told something was very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
They're not sure it comes in my size. All this like sizes, all this crap every day. It's exhausting. And my husband was like, oh yeah, someone gave me the keys to lock up the hotel because I was writing and he didn't want to disturb me.
Oh, it's so awful,
isn't it? God bless you. So Daniel, my husband literally got handed key because he was writing yeah, late
yeah,
at night
yeah.
and he was working on his script, and they could see that, and he's this posh 6'2" blonde yeah. very raw guy, and they gave him the keys to a hotel. So just put it through the box.
Yeah, but it's also that thing of, if you look a certain way and you act a certain way, like say Catch Me If You Can,
yes.
you can just get away with walking into anywhere doing yeah. people just sort of go, yeah, yeah, fine.
Yeah,
it's hideous.
I mean, it's like, God bless him, that's his experience. He's yeah. like, I don't know any other way. He's, people are just always nice to him.
Yeah,
people, it's like being a really beautiful supermodel.
Yeah,
they don't know, like, people
have no idea of what it's yeah. like to be like,
he's
yeah,
like, yeah,
overweight, spotty, whatever.
No, it's
yeah.
just like, people are always nice to me, and like, like with my daughter, she's super cute, and like all these boys just give her presents. She yeah. gets given yeah. gifts, and I said, get used to it, Ola.
Yeah.
Get used to it.
But on the flip side, I yeah. do think it's character building. Like, I know that yes. you don't want to have your character built every bloody day, but yeah. I do think that
it's yeah, it can
if
be,
everything
it,
goes well,
you need to know how to deal with the rough.
Yeah.
You need to know how to deal with when things go wrong.
Mm.
And I think that is a very, I think that's your job as a parent as well. Mm. But you're absolutely right. And also, you don't have to be clever or funny or nice or whatever mm. when you have everything
yeah.
that people aspire to have.
Yeah.
So it can be a real, I mean, I know a lot of girls who were models and who grew up just literally having free taxi rides, free yeah. gifts. Like, people love to worship
mm-hmm.
and people worship beauty and beautiful things.
Mm.
And so literally they just grew up being worshipped, and then the minute their looks went, they were like, what the hell happened?
It's also a kind of beauty though, because
yeah,
there are beauty absolutely lost if it's the beauty that is someone who has a sort of character yeah. and a grace and
yes.
things that continue
the
through
Lauren
later
Bacall
life.
School of Beauty,
yeah,
yes.
Charlotte Rampling, all yes. those people. But if you're someone for whom beauty is being young and having no wrinkles and stuff, you will inevitably fall from that
yeah,
throne, and it will
tough.
Be horrible.
It will be horrific because
yeah.
you haven't got all the other stuff to
fall back on.
You haven't got you haven't got the yeah. sense of humor, you haven't got the banter,
yeah.
you haven't got the things which comes from being humiliated during your
yeah.
teens
yeah.
and
yeah.
bouncing back
yeah.
to help you.
Thank you so much for your time.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
And also for being so vocal, both here and in life. I think you're doing great things. I think anyone who's listened to this will be like, oh my God, what a woman. So I'll include all of Ate's social handles.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye.
So that was the wonderful Atte Jewel, and I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. I could happily spend hours in Atte's company. She is just completely fascinating and full of joy. I just adore her. So thank you very much for listening. Please do subscribe, rate and review the episode, as I ask every single week. And come back next week when I'll be joined by another guest. See you then. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.